Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/liveshows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins. Hey, y'all. Before the episode starts, we want to acknowledge something we missed in our research for this episode.
After they aired, some of you pointed out that Madeline Murray O'Hare published an article in 1989 where she minimized the Holocaust. In it, she used rhetoric that was offensive and harmful and pushed revisionist claims disguised as religious criticism.
We deeply regret not catching this in our initial prep, and we appreciate those of you who brought it to our attention.
Thank you all so much. And now here's the episode. Critics called her rude, blasphemous, a destroyer of beliefs and values who popped off like a chain of fireworks in a church. The progressive activism of this lawyer, veteran, mom, fighter, and fan of four-letter words earned her the nickname, the most hated woman in America. This week's episode is The Murder of Madeline Murray O'Hare, Part 1.
A bump in the night. Heart fills with dread, probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you. I feel like I almost fit this description. Just a few differences, but it's pretty accurate.
I'm like, RIP Madeline Murray O'Hare, you would have loved Sinisterhood. You would have loved this show.
Oh, dude.
Man, watching her on the Johnny Carson show, I have never wanted to be a time traveler more than watching a woman sit in 1972 and just be like, I can say penis and scrotum all day long, but someone doesn't want me to say a four-letter word because it might offend their sensibilities. Meanwhile, I'm like, yes, get him, say like, it.
Were you listening in on my conversation that I just had the other day?
Like, speak the truth, woman, pray. She's like, I'm Aunt Madeline Murray O'Hare, staunchly an atheist. I worship her. I don't care. Sorry, lady, you started a church and you are our leader now.
Oh, I mean, I'm an atheist, so yeah. I bow down. I don't know. I don't know if you do that as an atheist, but yeah, she was a pioneer in the movement of getting a lot of things changed in schools and kind of just a place where people finally could come together and talk about it instead of being shunned and shamed.
And treated as if it was like, you said out loud that you're an atheist?
Mm-hmm.
She definitely became the face. I believe a famous quote of hers was, I am not an atheist. I am the atheist.
Fuck yeah. You're like the Ohio State University.
You know.
The Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Perhaps you've heard of me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not in this early days. We're going to give you guys her whole rundown of her life in two parts, starting at the very beginning. But we would not have probably covered this without the suggestions of Juanita Rubio, Char Panic, and Kara Joy Sam, who all three separately sent this in via the form. So thank y'all.
Well, obviously there's some interest in it then.
Yeah,
so
the eyes have it.
I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. Madeline Evelyn Mays was born on Palm Sunday, April 13th, 1919, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, enveloped in a dark caul, where the baby is born still inside the amniotic sac. Depending on one's cultures or superstitions, a baby born in a caul can be a sign of good fortune and protection against drowning. Others see it as an ominous sign, associating a dark caul with misfortune, witchcraft, or even vampirism.
Mahaley Lancaster, who we covered before, was born with the caul and in several ways makes me think of Madeline Murray O'Hare. I think they would have been friends.
One of my good friend's youngest son was born in a caul and TBD. He's way younger than those two. So I don't know if he'd be friends. But it was the first time I'd ever heard of that happening and seen a picture of, you know, I mean, like from the actual birth. It is, it's supposed to be like in a lot of cultures, like wise, you're going to go on to be like a seer and be and do great things. Madeline's parents, John and Lena Mays, were extremely poor, never wanted children. Madeline had one older brother, John Jr., whose birth was excruciating. When Lena discovered she was pregnant with Madeline, she attempted to end the pregnancy by throwing herself from a second floor balcony. The attempt failed, and years later, she told Madeline about it. This early experience set the tone for a family dynamic that was often harsh and devoid of warmth, according to Madeline's oldest son, Bill.
Yeah, I think he used the phrase rampant casual callousness, just kind of like, I didn't even want you any. She also took a bunch of herbs while she was pregnant and just would be like, I tried to throw myself off a roof to get rid of you anyway.
That will definitely shape someone. That's oftentimes into a killer or a sociopath from what we've seen. Heartbreaking for any kid to learn that. I mean, you didn't want kids. It wasn't a time where you had a choice.
Not even.
Okay. But you don't have to tell them that you tried to do these things, especially when they're so young that they're like, oh, well, clearly nobody wants me then.
No, truly. And I mean, her parents were like dirt poor. One of 10 kids, had no money. And I mean, her mom worked as a maid when her mom was 10 years old. So she had a job as a 10-year-old to tend to rich people's kids who happened to be named Madeline and Evelyn. So she used those names later. But that idea that you're so poor that you as a 10-year-old have a job to go to and then come and bring the money back home to family. Mm-hmm. So, of course, as soon as she was like of childbearing age, they were like, all right, you're going to get married. And it was like, I'm going to run away. And they're like, well, eventually you'll come back and we'll force you to have children.
Mm. The family was forced to move frequently as John Sr. struggled with alcoholism and bounced between jobs. He supported the family with various jobs, at times running a roadside tavern / brothel and illegally smuggling alcohol from West Virginia into Pennsylvania during Prohibition. An avid reader of pulp magazines, Madeline's father began calling her the Spider after a cunning, two-faced character in one of his favorite stories. Though she later claimed she had been an atheist since age 6, Madeline wrote in her high school yearbook that she wanted to serve God for the betterment of mankind. Her mother, meanwhile, had a deep belief in the occult, regularly using tarot cards and even performing readings for friends and neighbors. One reading allegedly predicted the death of a neighbor's son away at war, an event Madeline's mother took as proof of her psychic abilities.
She also summoned demons. She said she could curse enemies with merely a lock of hair. So the family was regularly attending church, but it was like more for the social aspect for mom and Madeline, it sounds like. Meanwhile,
Madeline got a little taste of the other side at an early age and didn't take to it.
No, but when she said she allegedly read the Bible when she was a child, she said, I got bored and I read it cover to cover and I found it cruel and immoral. But oftentimes I wonder if she inflated her abilities later. She did have a really high IQ. They said she was like brilliant, wanted to be a civil engineer when she was younger. Like the idea that even a child of people that coming from like the Dust Bowl, the Great Depression, that poor, had these ideas of, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to be a civil engineer, I'm going to design huge roads. And then she would listen to opera on the radio and read the newspaper. It's like she had this thirst to be like more than what I'm sure if your parents rejected you, you're like, I'll reject you right back and I'll do anything I can to leave.
Or I'm going to do everything to maybe make you proud of me somehow.
True. That's true. I mean, and her parents couldn't even manage the checkbook. By high school, she was like, okay, give me the money and I'll pay the bills because you guys can't figure it out. Because as much as her dad said he was religious, his true God was Jack Daniels, like the bottle. Yeah. Like,
a lot of it was for face.
Yeah.
That was the times you, I mean, everyone went to church. And if you didn't, you were a heretic.
No, truly. And she would get called a heretic by her dad because she wanted to read the newspaper and become kind of politicized. Her friends were like, she always had some crusade she was upset about or a civil war in another country.
Same.
Yeah, right. She literally said, she said, I can't remember a time in my life when I was not politicized. I was like, fuck yeah.
In 1941, Madeline married John Ross, a Marine. The next year, Madeline enlisted in the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps, where she worked as a cryptographer in Africa and Italy. During her time overseas, she claimed to have served on General Eisenhower's staff in Rome and even staged a bizarre, drunken stunt at St. Peter's Basilica, where she and some friends took the papal crown from a display case and coronated Madeline, the first female pope, in a mock ceremony. Her son Bill later wrote in his memoirs that he doubted many of his mother's famous tall tales. Mostly, Madeline worked on writing news wires about victories and battles that hadn't happened yet. This gave her skills in prescriptive, if not slightly exaggerated, reporting that would serve her later as leader of a ragtag political movement.
Yeah, I mean, she just married this guy, John Roths, in when he was 21, she just wanted to lose her virginity and get married. So they did. He worked for her dad. So, you know, it was like she literally said, I just want to get it over with.
So. Dude. I hate that was so prevalent that you were forced into doing, mainly women, mm-hmm. girls. I mean, she's young, forced into marrying people just for the sake of getting them out of the house, mm-hmm. getting some kind of trade-off, perhaps.
Yeah, she's like, I'm trying to have some sex. Money. I just want to have sex.
And oh, her, like, yes. I'm at the parents, though.
Oh, the parents, right. Well, he, and you know, of course, he goes in the army, and she said that it was Pearl Harbor that made her decide to enlist. But because she had a birth defect where she was born with a misshapen rib cage and a couple other things that would technically slot her out of regular army enlistment, but her high IQ qualified her for officer position. But yeah, your whole job is just like, she literally said, these battles hadn't even happened yet. Mm. I just was like, America came in and we won and it was so rad, you guys. And then she's like, sent it out. And she's like, I would see the stuff I had literally made up of thin air be reported as having happened. And she's like, so you can just say anything you want, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of the an early example of fake news.
Yeah,
It's not propaganda. Something that's just been, you know, come about in the past couple decades. People have been just reporting and writing the narrative they want to write for centuries, especially like when it comes to war. You want to put it out there that you're winning, you're doing great, you're trying to recruit, you're trying to look good to the other side.
Like, we are winning. Meanwhile, she just really liked being in Paris and Rome and stuff. I was like, why wouldn't you?
Hell yeah. She's getting laid for the first time in Paris and Rome, just writing stories left and right. During her service, Madeline had an affair with William Murray Jr., a married father from New York. In September of 1945, she became pregnant with his child. She wrongly assumed the pair would get divorced from their respective spouses and live as a family. However, William, a devout Catholic, refused to divorce his wife. Madeline went to court to seek legal recognition for her child and received a small pittance of child support. She blamed the Catholic Church and the Pope for her situation.
Like, you cannot feel worse for her, because this man straight up was like, you give me strength and courage. You are what, like, she had letters from him and he was like, you are what are you're getting me through this war. Like, I love you.
As old as time.
From like November of 44 to like finally she got pregnant like the next August or whatever. So they were like seeing each other at leave, like spending their weekends.
One night stand.
No, like they were like truly writing these love letters back and forth. So to me, I'm like, it's not crazy that she thinks, okay, well, like maybe he's in love with me and this might happen. And he's like, oh, I have 13 brothers and sisters. Like, I'm not tearing up a family.
I'm not going to go before the church and say that I'm getting divorced. That's very looked down upon.
Not at all.
On May 25th, 1946, Madeline gave birth to her first son, William Murray III, who she called Bill. Despite never marrying his father, she began calling herself Madeline Murray, a name she would use for the rest of her life. She divorced John Ross, her first husband, and raised little Bill on her own while living with her parents. Her father frequently expressed shame about Madeline's son out of wedlock, judgment rooted in his religious devotion. Furious and feeling abandoned, Madeline attempted to provoke divine retribution one day by walking out into a storm, cursing God and daring him to strike her with lightning. When no bolt came, she returned inside, more convinced than ever of her atheism.
I mean, it's not hard to be mad at religion that's being used as a cudgel to abuse you at home. I mean, she was just constantly getting called like good for nothing because you came home with this baby and you're not even married and what's wrong with you? And this drunk man's just screaming at you. You're like, I'll go get fucking struck by lightning right now.
That and the church is also a main reason that William Murray wouldn't leave his wife to be with her. So all these things that are rooted in religion mm-hmm. are really impacting her life in negative ways from early on, formative years, yeah. all the way throughout, you know, into early adulthood. With her veterans' benefits, she bought a farmhouse near Hayesville, Ohio, where she and Bill lived with her parents. Madeline took on a series of clerical jobs. However, her sharp personality and frequent clashes with coworkers led to conflicts in nearly every workplace. She later claimed people were intimidated by her intelligence and wit.
It killed me because she tried to get a job at another place. And you know how, like, you ask for a letter of recommendation? Her former boss wrote a letter of condemnation without her asking, like, found out she got a new job and was like, you damn, dude. This woman. I was like, don't chase me down and try to tell people not to hire me. Rude.
Unless I did something like egregious. No, they just call ahead and let them know, hey, she's kind of a handful, by the way.
She just apparently had a lot to say. Yeah.
I mean, okay. But again, right. The times here, it's like women are supposed mm-hmm. to be secretaries and sit at their desk and not speak until spoken to. And in comes Madeline, who's like, hey, y'all want to talk about, I don't know, religion and how it sucks and how God isn't real and da da da. And they're like, we don't know how to handle a woman like this.
Yeah, I mean, especially because she was very, like we said, political from the get-go. And before it really was like mainstream, in the 1950s, she starts kind of talking more about these progressive movements and causes and why aren't women getting paid the same as men? Mm-hmm. And why aren't we all unionized? And so they said, yeah, she was, quote, unable to take supervision. And I was like, some of us don't need supervision. Some of us are fierce creatures and we just need to be let free.
Are our own supervisors.
Exactly.
I see a lot of myself in her early, just like not liking any job you have mine was less clashes with coworkers and more that I just hated everything I was doing because it wasn't anything I was interested in.
It's like not pointless, but kind of like, I don't really care about this cause. Yeah. So like, or like, here's my ideas for this cause to help. And they're like, well, we want to do it our way only. And we actually just want you to stand over there and push buttons. It's like, well, I'm more of like an idea person, so I'm not going to just stand here and push these buttons.
Yeah, yeah. I got an idea about these buttons. We can arrange them in a more efficient pattern. And so like, then when you push them, it takes even half the time.
And they're like, no, we just want you to do the inefficient way. And it's like, take two of these and call me in the morning. If you're not watching on YouTube, I threw my middle fingers up. Hell yeah.
I've seen on TikTok now the new way is to do this, and it's very funny to me.
Like backwards?
Yes.
Palms out. Wait. So we're flipping.
Palms forward.
Palms forward birding. Does it make it? Doesn't that mean it's facing towards me or it's facing around like fuck everybody? Is this like a sink? This is
maybe
like,
the latter. I don't know that the people put that much thought into it. I think it's just dance. A funny new thing to do.
I'm just like doing a dance with it.
Emphasizes it even more. Like,
all right, we're doing it. We're leading in. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood, Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/liveshows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins. Madeline's educational journey began at Ashland College in Ashland, Ohio, where she earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in 1949. She furthered her studies at the University of Toledo and the University of Pittsburgh. In 1952, she obtained a law degree from the South Texas College of Law in Houston. However, she did not take the bar exam and thus never practiced law. Still, her interest in law and the knowledge she obtained in school would serve her greatly over the years.
Allegedly, Bill, her oldest son, said that it was because she could not pass the bar. She claimed that she didn't even take it because she was going to have to say, so help me God, when she was sworn in. And she's like, I'm not even going to say that, so I don't even want to.
I don't think she Well, I think she would have been a good lawyer, but she would have had a very like niche client base, yeah. I think. Yeah. People that need somebody just to argue stuff that's never been argued before. Wish she could do a lot of work as a lawyer, but she went on to do it in other ways too. But again, these are like little things that I think a lot of people, even now, but especially then, were like, can you just shut up and not have an opinion about everything? Again, hard relate, because I also don't think in a courtroom you should have to swear on a Bible, swear to God. I don't like in the Pledge of Allegiance that my kid has to say every day in public school, one nation under God. I think it should all be separate. So for someone even back then, a woman, to be putting up a fight about this, she was a trailblazer and really like put up with a lot of hateful shit. I bet she got an email telling her that they wish she would die in a plane crash.
I had Paris cut that whole bit out. I was like, we got to publish that whole thing just on TikTok or YouTube, just that clip of us talking about that email. If you guys didn't know, we got an email from this guy named Rick who said, may you all die in a plane crash, you stupid fucking C word.
But capitalized.
He capitalized the C word, so at least he knew to give us the respect of the capital C. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you also for bringing transphobia into it. Yes, you for stupid no reason. Fuck.
Yeah.
Because of course that's how you feel. He told us that we don't even know what a real woman is.
I'm like, what are you even fucking talking about? Folks like that, like fuck them, because it's oftentimes a abhorrence to hearing a woman speak in a way that you don't think under your, let's be realistic here, societally imposed patriarchal standards of, well, it's actually, and the patriarchy, which does like pull from Christianity insofar as like the man's the head of household, men should be speaking, not women. And so, yeah, for her around this time, I think being as pro kind of communist as she was very pro prison reform, anti-segregation, pro union. She wanted to ban nuclear testing near residential sites. I mean, she was extremist at the time, which now is sort of like still kind of progressively extreme, right? It could be extreme to some people to say that if you're more centrist, I guess, liberal, but she's just started getting really into like speaking. She would invite people into the family's like basement to come have these like kind of meetings because she was getting so excited about this idea of there are movements out there and I could potentially be a part of one of them.
Yeah. I like that though. I mean, it didn't turn into it, but that's the same way like Synanon started. And so, right? You know, I mean, like cults or groups, activist groups, it's all usually starts with like meeting in a basement of a passionate person, and then you get an organized group together to go out and help.
And that's the person who's finally going to go, you know what? My basement, that's the basement, is often the one that's like going to open the door and make a real change.
Mm-hmm. Professionally, O'Hare dedicated herself to social work, serving in various public welfare agencies. By 1960, she was employed as a social worker in Baltimore, Maryland, where she was actively engaged in addressing the needs of the community by providing support and resources to individuals and families in need, advocating for social justice, and striving to improve the welfare system. Madeline's dedication to social work was intertwined with her activism. Her experiences in the field informed her understanding of systemic issues, particularly the influence of religious practices in public institutions. This further fueled her passion for advocating for the separation of church and state. Madeline believed in the importance of tangible actions over religious rituals, later stating before the Supreme Court,
"An atheist believes that a hospital should be built instead of a church. An atheist believes that deed must be done instead of prayer said." And it makes sense for her to have a dad who was, you know, religious and then really more like an alcoholic, but like kind of yelling these religious things at her while she's like, I'm literally out actually helping people as a social worker. And you're just shaming me with your
And you're using system. The Bible as a shaming tool against me when
a weapon.
You're just drunk as shit right now anyways, which what do they say about that in the Bible? You know, cherry picking a way to psychologically and emotionally abuse her.
Yeah, I mean, really, it was like, and like, she's like, you're like, okay, you're sitting here just drinking, yelling at me, yelling at your kids. Not that she was a peach. I think she also yelled right back, but she was also not prescribing behaviors on others. You know, it's like, I'll swear. You can swear too. Like, do whatever you want to do and just take care of others.
At this point, too, she's an adult and her parents are living with her in a house that she bought.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and granted, her mom did help to raise the kid, you know, help raise Bill at the time.
Begrudgingly.
Too. Begrudgingly, but truly, like, I mean, she was the one that was paying for stuff.
Yeah. So at some point, I would be like, you want to call me a whore one more time and get the fuck out of the house that I'm paying for.
Yeah. She stands up for herself. I like it.
Take you and your bottle of Jack and hit the road.
Mm-hmm.
On November 16th, 1954, Madeline gave birth to her second son, John Garth Murray, fathered by her colleague, Michael Fiorillo. Despite the different paternal lineage, she bestowed upon her new son the Murray surname. It was also around this time that Madeline, unhappy with the United States policies towards the Soviet Union, began attending socialist workers' party meetings. In 1959, she even attempted to defect to the Soviet Union, but the country denied her and her young son's citizenship.
Yeah, she, two things. She named John J-O-N Garth Murray. Her dad was J-O-H-N. And very specifically throughout his entire life called him nothing but Garth. Like, kind of as a little bit of like, what, dad? I named him after you. Garth, come over here, Garth.
Garth.
Yeah, she also kind of had, like, her dad started having, he had a heart attack and she kind of felt bad and was like, well, I'm not going to fight with him as much. But then he kept fighting with her. And the last thing she said was to him was, I hope you drop dead of a heart attack. And then she came back home and he had, and her mom in that classic Mays family callousness said, well, Spider, you got your wish. Your dad's dead. He died of a heart attack. Just like you wanted. So it kind of makes you see kind of how a person could be so bombastic and like the word callous makes sense because it's like scars and scars over time. But yeah, she was ready to fucking go to Russia. She did not speak Russian. She did not have money. She didn't have a job lined up. She made it to France and Russia was like, you cannot come here.
So she had passion. She had gumption.
She had so much gumption.
She had to have more than that.
She had to come back indeed. But by September 1960, when she came back, which is where we're going to pick up her story, she was real fucking pissed because she's like, I don't want to be in this fucking country anyway. Came back.
Same.
And then this is what happens to her. So I think we're all going to learn a lesson. You got to channel the rage all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. But back to her parents, too. Like, empathy is something it's not really taught as much as you just kind of learn by seeing that and being around that, and as well as sympathy, too. And when you see none of that, you do develop a wall at a very early age of like, I don't care about your feelings. You don't care about mine. And that's just kind of the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
And you are going to have problems with coworkers. Right. And other people later in life when that's kind of how you've thought your whole life, but you didn't have the building blocks from the jump. You know, you weren't even wanted and you were told that all the time.
Yeah. And spoken to like that. And I think her dad and her eventually kind of had, when she was younger, a better relationship, but it's like, as soon as it took that turn of like, you've disappointed us with this kid out of wedlock, when she was pregnant with Garth, her dad and her brother ganged up on her at one point and she's like, picked a knife up and lunged at them and was like, I will stab you to death if you keep talking shit about my kids in not so many words, although I'm probably not too far off.
Yeah.
So that, but like, you're right. When the whole home is predicated upon this like rejection dysfunction, it's like this attachment, rejection, but like, cause she would still most nights sit around the dining table with her mom drinking tea in SoCo, like getting, you know, having their little and talking about the day. And every Christmas her mom loved Christmas. The woman who would curse people and that was a psychic or whatever would like decorate this huge Christmas tree and made Christmas this big deal. So it gave Madeline this like lifelong love of Christmas that it makes you wonder if up until, you know, when she was an elderly person, she would have these like world famous, like beautiful Christmas trees and everything that like, that's like your one happy connection to your family
and your childhood
and that you ironically are like fighting against. Like, what? She loved Christmas. Like, before you hear
Christmas tree up too every year. So it's just whatever.
Before you hear the rest of the story, this bitch loved Christmas and don't get me wrong.
Too.
So do I. I fucking love it.
This bitch loves Christmas too.
This bitch loves Christmas.
But I like the secular parts of Christmas.
And I was going to say, and I think we will hear that she is a brilliant person and that can see nuance in the various aspects of our life and sees the nuance of the government versus the personal life is very different. So to me, it's very funny surface wise that she loved Christmas. But when you hear her argument, you're like, that makes sense.
Yeah. Also, Christmas was a pagan holiday that the Christians stole. So if you want to drill it back down to the roots, she has an argument there as well. Madeline's life took a major turn in 1960 when she discovered that Bill, then 14, was required to participate in daily school-led prayers at his public school in Baltimore. Madeline was deeply opposed to any government-mandated religious practice. Incensed, she took legal action, filing Murray versus Curlett, which challenged the constitutionality of school prayer. The case was initially dismissed at the state level, but it gained national attention because of its bold opening line.
Your petitioners are atheists.
Tons of fan letters and donations supporting Madeline followed.
Because again, in 1960, this was a huge deal to publicly come out and say, not only publicly, but in a court filing, that you're atheist, because atheism, Joseph McCarthy throughout the 1950s correlated it with communism. So it's this Red Scare and like, maybe if you believe that, you're actually a communist and you should go to jail. So she was like, type it in the petition.
Tell them what we are. Kind of like when I found out that, I guess I don't know why I thought kids didn't say the Pledge of Allegiance, yes. But I was like, Ella just said it one day. I was like, who taught you that? She's like, we have to say it in school every morning. I was like, really? They still do that?
You're like, they make y'all do that? You have to do a moment of silence?
It's not like the language changes, but the whole idea of saying the Pledge of Allegiance every morning, full stop, is weird to me. Why are we making young children stand up and pledge allegiance to a country that doesn't support them?
I was going to say, could give a shit if they die in a shooting, at least.
Many of them don't believe that they're even people. Don't think that they exist. Don't think that they should have the same rights. So why are we doing that? Maybe you teach it so you know it. So then
you can know it once.
You know it if you need it. But like, standing up and pledging an allegiance to anything has kind of a religious undertone to it.
Yeah, I mean, it does say under God. We can talk about it as part of one of her future challenges. But that you're right, though, that feeling of, wait, what are they making you do in school? Like where your kid just, she just walked her kid to school and had not walked him to school yet. And as she's walking in the school, she's like, what's that sound of everybody speaking in unison? And Bill's like, yeah, they're praying. That's like the Lord's Prayer. We say it together every morning. She's like, you say what now? And I'm like, your son is 14 and you did not know until he was 14.
That's
but it
wild.
Also was like those schools. Like it was very specifically, they lived in Baltimore and they had just came back from Russia. But it is wild that you're, you know, walking through the hallways going, there's a whole practice here I haven't been told about and that's deeply offensive to my family's beliefs.
But it's the norm and nobody thinks that you should have the right to be incensed about it. So therefore it's like, well, of course this is how it is. Why would we even tell you? I mean, Why would you assume differently, you heretic?
Yeah, and why be upset about it, you devil monster?
Mm-hmm.
Sinister Hood will be right back.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinister Hood, Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/live shows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins. The case was combined with a similar case from Pennsylvania, and both were argued before the U.S. Supreme Court in 1963. In the meantime, Bill and his little brother suffered bullying and were often ostracized at school. Madeline converted supportive donations into newsletter subscribers, building an audience. Still, the harassment was relentless. Locals egged the Murray household, spat in the family's faces on the street, destroyed their yard, and even stole their cat.
Yeah, it wasn't a good time to be one of her kids just because she was not just doing the school, the prayer case, but was also still, involved in her activist causes. Like neighbors would be like, I think she's with communists and like trying to like call them in and get them in trouble. But it was very smart of her to try to parlay this into a larger platform, because the other family from the Pennsylvania case literally was like, please, we don't want to be interviewed. You don't have to use our, like, our names have to be in it, but like, we're good. We're just trying to
because
get this
fixed. See what happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she wanted it though. She's like, get out of the way.
Stolen. Yeah. No, but I mean, like, if you don't want that, you are subjected to a lot of harassment. And yeah, as a 14-year-old, which is already, what a time to be alive, a 14-year-old in high school. Mm-hmm. But then everyone knows that your mom is the one that's putting up this fuss about everything. You're going to get singled out and targeted for sure.
Oh, definitely. And footage of Bill from the time, he's like, I'm an atheist too. Like, I don't want to say the prayer, but they make me say it. So he seemed like he was like in on it. It also, he later said he was being manipulated, which fair enough. Like, if you have a contentious relationship with a parent and perhaps their cause can become your cause, and now mm-hmm. all of a sudden they love you very much because you're participating and helping them. Mm-hmm. But he wrote in his memoir that Madeline felt two men had wronged her. She was mad at men, she was mad at God, and God was male. And like, first of all, William, okay. But truly, like, because later on somebody would go, God, he did da-da-da. And Madeline's like, he, why do you always say he? I'm like, good for you. But mm-hmm. I think that was kind of later on Bill characterized it as, I was kind of a pawn. I was my mother's pawn.
Yeah.
At the time. But it's like, I don't know, what are any
there
of
might
our
be
beliefs?
Some truth in that.
Yeah.
Also, you know, it is a very male-centric religion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and men have wronged her in several, her father and then two relationships. So I could see how she would kind of lump it all together, that all men suck. The case finally made it to the country's highest court in 1963. In an 8-1 decision, the court ruled in favor of Madeline and the other plaintiffs, determining that state-sponsored prayer in public schools violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Madeline famously argued that Americans had the right to be free from religion as much as they had the right to practice it.
And this is a huge seminal case. It established the principle of state neutrality in religion and public education, and that officially reading scripture, because there were, even before this, there were some schools that would be like, we're going to learn about history and like pull the Bible out. Mm-hmm. Or we're all going to have this prayer that we all say in unison that is a Christian prayer. It's not a non-denominational, like, dear, you know, deity of your choice or whatever. It's like, Father God, Jesus, thank you for, you know, our Father who art in
heaven.
Little
baby Jesus. Yeah. And yeah,
unless you're going to pray to baby Jesus doing a ice dance.
Unless you're going to go through and say a prayer in for every religion. But even then, what if you're no religions?
Yeah.
What, do you just sit in silence for a minute? Like, it doesn't, it's just keep them separate, you know?
Got to keep it separated.
I will say, we have to just stop for a second and recognize that one woman fought to make this happen, which is such a big thing that is still today a thing. Like, it wasn't a whole group of people or a bill got passed. It was one mother that was like, the fuck you said? You're saying the prayer in school? That went and was like, no, we're not doing it. And I think that that's just so powerful that like one lady did that.
Oh, absolutely. And the fight, you know, she filed it in 1960. They didn't get the ruling handed down till 1963, because you know it all takes that long to go through. So there were wins and losses along the way, and she never lost that fight. And she kept it up in the media, talking to newspapers. And like you said, despite eggs thrown at your window mm-hmm. or people being like, literally writing letters like, may you all die in a plane crash, you stupid mm-hmm. fucking cunt, like verbatim what same, but like for a much more important reason. But nevertheless, like the idea that you have this wrong that you've seen and you're going to see it all the way until the highest way you can hopefully get it righted, mad respect.
Oh yeah, definitely. The ruling effectively banned mandatory school prayer across the nation and reinforced the principle of separation of church and state. Footage of Madeline aired on news programs around the country, standing on the steps of the highest court in the land and proudly declaring,
there will be no more religious ceremonies in the public schools.
This victory catapulted her into the national spotlight, making her both a celebrated advocate for secularism and a reviled figure among religious conservatives.
And it's fascinating because some people said that in November of that year, when President Kennedy was assassinated, that some teachers were kind of like, well, we would all get together and pray for the president, but we can't because of Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Go do it in your car. Go organize something off the campus that people aren't going to feel like they're left out of if they don't want to participate.
Or just take them all in the room whenever it's a rainy day on the soccer field and show them the Zapruder film and then let them process it.
At a religious school, though, I will
say. That was you.
My soccer coach did do that in middle school.
You're going to learn
the
truth.
If it's raining, you can't play soccer, so you got to learn about the JFK assassination.
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to play conspiracy theories either. We're going to watch the Zapruder film. Mm-hmm. You're going to know the truth. That's an interesting, like you said, that's how ingrained it was, though, of like, oh, a horrible tragedy happened. We should all pray together.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, interesting that their concern was that atheism would lead to communism when, in fact, the homogenization of beliefs is actually communism. Brief aside, I started listening to Ted Cruz's book, Unwoke, for a project I'm separately working on.
Ugh.
But the irony, and it's not even narrated by him. It's narrated by a guy that he definitely wishes he sounded like. But the idea of this, for the woke left is forcing this belief system on you or whatever, and it really isn't. And that's what she was trying to fight against, was that there is a singular Christian denominating belief system that is now forced upon people. And actually, it should be the rugged American individualism that should allow us individually to find the reason for living and go and pursue that as hard as we can and not be shackled by the bounds of these like things, unless we want to shackle ourselves, in mm-hmm. which case go forth and do that. But she wasn't like, I think nobody should be allowed to have religion. She's like, go do whatever you want to do. Just don't make my kid do it.
Yeah,
don't make me
yeah.
do it.
Don't put all these kids in a box or anybody all in a box and make them conform to something that if they don't agree with it, they should have the right to not agree with it just as much as you have the right to agree with it.
Bird.
In 1963, following her successful challenge against mandatory Bible readings in public schools, Madeline founded the Society of Separationists. This organization, which later became known as American Atheist, was established to advocate for the absolute separation of religion from government and to defend the civil rights of atheists. Under Madeline's leadership, American Atheist actively engaged in legal actions to uphold the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. The organization's mission statement emphasized its commitment to
defend the civil rights of non-believers, work for the separation of church and state, and address issues of First Amendment public policy.
Madeline took her fight for atheism to the airwaves in 1964. She filed Murray versus the United States, arguing that atheists should receive equal broadcast time alongside religious groups based on the Fairness Doctrine, an FCC policy requiring balanced coverage of controversial issues. She believed that if stations aired religious programming, they should also provide airtime for secular and atheist perspectives. However, her case was unsuccessful. Despite the loss, she still received donations from supporters interested in her cause.
Yeah, you kind of learn, like, even if you don't win, merely being out in the public sphere advocating for these things and just being sometimes the first person to even broach the subject or come up with this idea leads to a lot of people that want to follow you. They're like, oh yeah, she is right. I'll send her $20 or I'll leave my estate to her, which is what started happening after that first big win. You had some wealthy atheists being like, well, I didn't have a church to leave this to. Now I have an organization.
Mm-hmm. And with supporters also comes a lot more haters, the more
true, true.
That you get out there.
Oh yeah.
In 1964, Life magazine referred to Madeline as
the most hated woman in America,
a moniker she reportedly embraced. The following year, she moved from Baltimore to Austin, Texas, where she established the American Atheist Center and the Society of Separationists. Here, she also married her second husband, Richard O'Hare, in 1965. Despite their eventual separation, the two remained married until Richard's death in 1978.
Yeah, she just decided to, like, go on the road. Like, she
she's
started
weird.
Yeah.
She's making it weirder.
She got weird in Austin, went back to Texas, I think, and then just started, like, traveling. I think for the years after she won that case and started filing these other cases, it was like, we have to keep our name in the public eye. So if anything was filed or was thinking about being filed or whatever, she would go to colleges. She would go to on television shows, broadcast, like radio broadcasts, newspaper interviews, anything she could do to just stay in the
relevant.
Public eye. Yeah. To try to like stay relevant, essentially.
That's smart.
Despite like kind of losing yeah. Several cases.
No, but I mean, she's right. We were just talking about that with just celebrities in general the other night of like the smart ones, like their PR and marketing team, like drop things every now mm-hmm. and then to where you're kind of always in the news. There's always something being said about you, hopefully positive in the news to keep you relevant.
Yeah, you're like trying to drip here, a little mm-hmm. bit something here, a little bit something there. But yeah, she said she made 87 appearances in like 6 months at one point. Oof. And flew like 35,000 miles. And those were on like 1960s airplanes.
Just everybody smoking.
God yeah. damn. Just puffing it up.
Another significant change in Madeline's personal life came about when she took custody of her granddaughter, Robin, due to her son Bill's struggles with alcohol and drugs. Robin became an integral part of the family and later played a significant role in the American Atheist Organization.
Yeah, Bill and Madeline would like not talk for a while, and then he would come back, and then he would work with her, and then he didn't want to work there anymore, and then he would come back and forth. And what? So he had a baby with Robin's mom, and Robin's mom still needed to finish college. And so Robin was supposed to stay with Bill, but Bill would be like drunk at work, would be like drunk at his desk, falling asleep. And so that left little Garth, his little brother, who was 12 years old, to really become Robin's like caregiver mm-hmm. when he's only 12. Like, that's so
young.
What
is that called when you...
Parentification.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. When you make him become a parent at a super young age. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, Madeline loved her and like, you know, loved being a grandma, like thought it was, it really softened her in people's eyes. They would like watch Robin come and climb in her lap. And Madeline was always like a... As my mamma would say, she was of hearty stock. She, you know, she was a thick broad. And so, you know, kind of this
you gotta
cuddly,
be. You're yeah. fighting the whole establishment.
She's like, I'm a fucking linebacker, bitch. But she was like, you know, this kind of cuddly grandma all of a sudden are like gardening with their little granddaughter. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, she was cussing me out recently. But she, there was just something about little Robin that just like melted her heart. And Robin's mm-hmm. mom eventually, you know, I think, maybe was alienated from her and like didn't really have a relationship. So for as far as Robin was concerned, like her 12-year-old uncle was her dad and mm. her grandma was her mom and her grandpa-in-law was kind of like, you know, he wasn't really interested in being a grandpa.
Yeah, it's the relationship with her kids is sad, but also perhaps not surprising giving her own upbringing.
Yeah.
And you know, if you don't have a close relationship with your parents and that was never something that was taught and in fact, they kind of pushed you away. When you have your own kids, it's not a, you know, a it's far jump to think that it's going to play into that. In 1968, Madeline expanded her outreach by hosting a widely broadcast radio talk show where she discussed atheism and secularism. She also published The Atheist Viewpoint, a compilation of transcripts from her radio broadcast, further solidifying her status as a household name in the realm of atheist activism.
And she really like rocketed to fame because she was on Phil Donahue's first
the
ever
first
show.
Guest.
First guest ever in 1967.
That's wild, dude.
And came on like as I'm an atheist and I'm here to talk about it. And then started doing these like debates, both on the Donahue show and other shows where she would debate Reverend Bob Harrington, which they called him the chaplain of Bourbon Street. But it was very fun to watch some of these old clips of her because he's like, thank God I'm alive. And she's like, God didn't give you life. Your parents gave you life. He's like, well, God gave me life because she goes, your parents had fun one night and that's why you're here. And I'm like, her skills at just being fucking cutting. Like, skills.
She doesn't mince words.
Not at all. But I mean, the debates would be like two priests and then a rabbi and then Madeline. And so she was really having to hold her own like on... like at Harvard, at the University of Chicago, mm-hmm. she would go to these like venerated institutions and on fucking national television, including the Johnny Carson show, and made a very good showing, I think, for atheists, because on paper, it's like, this is a dumb woman who doesn't want God in schools. But then when you hear her speaking, she's undeniably brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Madeline remained active in the courtroom, finding that no matter whether she won or lost, simply filing suit would encourage a flurry of donations from eager supporters. Throughout the 1970s, the cases she filed cemented her reputation as an enemy of religion's outsized role in American life. In 1970, she sued the Nixon White House, arguing that its weekly religious services violated the Establishment Clause by using government resources for religious observance. The case was dismissed as the services were voluntary and not government mandated.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/liveshows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins.
I would argue that's a weak defense, but yeah, I didn't make the rules.
You win some, you lose some. But yeah, they said they refused to halt it because the supporters of the president said that there was nothing in the Constitution that prevents the president from privately practicing his religion. I'm like, well, he also simultaneously was privately eavesdropping on reporters and doing crimes. Mm-hmm. So he does. Sometimes they doth protest too much.
But then you go pray and it's okay because you're absolved of your sins.
The Lord forgives us for our sins. I'm not a crook. I did the backwards.
I'm not an atheist.
And then you put your fingers backwards. You got to watch it on YouTube, guys. There's some hand gestures going on here.
There's quite a few. More than usual, that's for sure.
The next year, Madeline took issue with NASA's practice of astronauts reading the Bible during space missions, claiming it amounted to government endorsement of religion. The court rejected her argument since NASA did not require religious readings, ruling instead that the astronauts' actions were personal expressions of faith rather than official policy. That one, I think I can understand.
Yeah, I mean, if you're up there and you want to read something, read whatever you want to read. But it's different if NASA's like, and as soon as you're on the dark side of the moon, that's when you start reading Judges chapter 12 or whatever. But I think it was more like, well, people can hear and see you, so read whatever you want.
Or if they were like, and we've stocked the cabin with Bibles and only Bibles. Don't bring anything else religious to read. You can only read Bibles.
That's all you got.
If people can bring, you know, whatever they want, then I think that's okay.
Playboy magazine, and then it floats away, and you're like, no!
This is my God that I pray to. In 1977, Madeline sued the Austin, Texas City Council, asserting that its practice of opening public meetings with a prayer coerced religious participation in a government setting. The court upheld the practice, citing historical tradition and previous rulings that allowed legislative prayers as long as they did not favor one specific religion.
Yeah, legislative invocations, first of all, hard to say, but legislative invocations, at least in Texas, are not technically, is what the court said, violative of church-state separation because they're brief ceremonial prayers.
So, but they're still ceremonial prayers, ding-dongs. Nobody's saying the length of them is a problem. It's just the fact that you're doing it, period.
I think where I kind of have it struggle with this, because I'm also not Christian, I'm Zen Buddhist, but I don't want everybody to pray like I pray. In fact, I want to hear everybody else's prayer. And what gets me, again, is that if we move toward a more inclusive society where we might have a Christian preacher, or we rotate it, and there's a different mm-hmm. faith leader at every meeting, and we have a rabbi one week, and we have a Muslim imam one week, and we have a Zen Buddhist one week, and we have an atheist one week bringing some sort of a philosophical enlightenment speech or something. But I think when we get that, and they go, that's woke. All right, now that's kind of woke. All right, now we don't want that. So it's like, okay, well, so you are trying to establish a religion, and apparently there's a specific one that you favor.
Oh, for sure.
Just be honest. You know what I mean? To go, well, it's not really denominational. It's more of like history and tradition. I'm like, no, it isn't. just be forthright.
Government as a whole is largely Christian.
Yeah.
That's not even a hot take. That's just how it is. And they want to push that religion and that agenda for a lot of reasons.
Various reasons, certainly. Yeah. And we'll see it. She was not even facing the brunt of the conservative Christian movement at this time.
Madeline also sought the removal of In God We Trust from U.S. currency in 1978, arguing that it violated the Establishment Clause by promoting a religious belief. The court dismissed her claim, ruling that the phrase was a form of, quote, ceremonial deism, meaning a historical, patriotic expression with no direct religious coercion. She also argued that the tax-exempt status of churches ought to be changed because it was a government support of religion, a case she also lost.
Yeah, the argument on the taxation was like, well, it's a way to keep it because keep church and state separate because we're kind of saying anybody that's a church doesn't have to pay taxes. And then we've seen in like a twin flame situation how now you've opened this door to manipulation of, and it's not the intent. If the intent is like, well, the church fulfills some of these, you know, charitable things that the government otherwise couldn't afford to do, so that's why we shouldn't charge them taxes. Well, then you have scammers like twin flames that are like, yeah, yeah, we're a church. Sure, sure. That's why I need another Maserati.
Or regular churches who buy a bunch of mega jets and fancy cars with their parishioners' donations.
Joel Osteen style. So yeah, I don't think she was off on any of these. I don't know that at the time the court was like, let's just go whole hog and we're going to just like fully move forward in the face of like stripping all religion out of it. Because with every Supreme Court decision, you know, these were coming years and years apart that you see what we always talk about, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's pendulum. Like it starts to swing in the other direction. Like she had her get the prayer out of school. Mm-hmm. That's a swing in her direction. But you start to see that brings people to drag it back the other way.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think we should not have In God We Trust on the money.
Right.
So another thing we've got in common. The same year, Madeline successfully argued that a Texas constitutional requirement that individuals holding public office profess belief in God discriminated against atheists and violated the First and 14th Amendments. The court required that Texas stop enforcing the requirement, but the provision symbolically remained in the state constitution.
Yes, so our state constitution, you have to, you cannot be an atheist. You have to profess. Well, they don't enforce it, but
good thing I don't know it, because joke's on him, because I don't abide by it. I will say, though, in just the past few things we've said, to me, there's like a lot of dog whistle language of almost like heritage, not hate. Like, well, this is ceremonial. This has been here for so long that we're just doing it as a ceremony. It's like, that doesn't mean that it's not wrong and it should be changed.
I mean, that's the question, right? Of Supreme Court jurisprudence, they have been tasked in, you know, Marbury versus Madison of like, the purpose of the Supreme Court is to determine what is and isn't constitutional. So then they do come up with these tests. The question is like, do we love the test? I mean, that's that we don't nominate them ourselves to the Supreme Court. Like the president that we, you know, vote in mostly nominates them. The senators that we vote for futilely, it seems like sometimes given who I'm represented by are the ones that, you know, vet them and whatnot. So
it's not an accurate representation of what the people, or at least certain people, actually want.
Yeah, and he just kind of goes, well, it's, you know, history and tradition. And like you said, you're like, well, tradition wasn't great for like a lot of us, myself, yourself included. And we're like the top, we benefit the most from that tradition right under the dudes. Mm-hmm. And so even for us, we're like, no, that tradition's not great. And she was the same way. I mean, Madeline Murrow Harris' whole deal was like speaking up for people who were not being spoken up for by the government, included her particular cause that she heralded and championed was this atheism. But coming out from that was also, she was a greatly accepting person insofar as the people that she hired, that she surrounded herself with. She was not giving these like kind of, you know, religious tests or like morality tests. If we'll see if that works out for you, right, in the end. But like, I think she was like way, way, way open with stuff when other people wouldn't. And that tradition definitely rings false in the ear of someone who's like, yeah, tradition is actually fucking all these people that are my friends. So yeah. I don't give a fuck about your tradition.
Mm-hmm. Madeline unsuccessfully challenged the National Park Service's approval of a public mass by Pope John Paul II on the National Mall. Similarly, in another suit, she sued over a nativity scene displayed in the Texas State Capitol, asserting it was an unconstitutional government endorsement of Christianity. Again, the court upheld the display, reasoning that religious symbols were permissible when included in broader cultural or historical exhibits featuring secular elements.
And this is what doesn't get, it gets my goat, because the secular elements, like Santa and a Christmas tree, so therefore it's not Christian because we also put Santa in a Christmas tree.
in what nativity scene have you ever seen where Santa is one of the three wise men?
So that's what they're saying. They're like, so it's not a Christian nativity scene. It's a nativity scene and also Santa. So it's secular and also religious. So we don't have to take them down.
I've never seen a nativity scene that had anything that wasn't religious in it. Have you?
No, but I mean, that's how I think these government buildings try to get around it, is to try to couch it and go, well, it's really a broader cultural display.
On paper.
Yeah, it's not.
But I'm going to go out there and put a devil in there then, if we can just put whatever we want up in this nativity scene.
And your argument's really valid, because that is what the Satanic Temple goes into these states that have a, we're going to put the Ten Commandments in the rotunda, mm-hmm. and it is unconstitutional if you don't also put or allow for other cultural displays. And so that's why they put like Baphomet in some of the rotundas, which is always a cooler statue, unless it's a buddy
way
Christ.
Cooler.
I want, if we're allowed to put anything, I want to put the buddy Christ from Dogma into some.
Okay.
Where he's like, hey, he's your friend.
We can all pick one. Madeline fought these battles hard and publicly, earning her plenty of enemies and death threats. In response, a rising tide of conservative Christianity sprung up, led by Jerry Falwell, a Baptist pastor and founder of the Moral Majority in 1979. His group advocated for the reintroduction of religious values into public life and sought to reverse secular gains made by Madeline and other activists. They framed issues like school prayer, religious displays, and faith-based influence in politics as central to American identity.
And it was good to have somebody to point to and be like, you don't want to be like her, this woman on TV yelling at everybody.
This loud woman who cusses all the time.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I think there's a reason to cuss sometimes.
But again, this American identity, this isn't representative of every single one of their identity. You're choosing the identity you want everybody to be and then trying to put them in this box instead of encouraging and supporting who people already are.
You're right. It's a prescriptive identity that they're choosing. And by they, I mean, it's like, you know, the people in power. But yeah, the history of Jerry Falwell is very fascinating and beyond the scope of this. But I highly recommend that Adam McKay documentary on Hulu about what's called God Forbid.
Yeah. And the audacity of someone like him to tell anybody how to live their life, especially like in a Christian moral way, is laughable.
And then I'm like, meanwhile, your son grows up to be like a massive cook.
Literally. Yeah, standing in the corner jerking off. Watching his wife get plowed in a Motel 6.
By that guy from the pool that worked at the pool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think you see that drag go back in the other direction of, well, she's a communist. And then when the communist label kind of falls by the wayside in the 1950s and 60s and stops being like anti-communist, and it starts to become, well, we're the moral majority and we're the ones that have been left behind by this horrific, these Vietnam protesters that are anti-American and all these beatniks that are doing drugs. Meanwhile, COINTELPRO and the FBI is like actively trying to undermine the countercultural movement and get in and make everyone look disorganized, drug addicts, criminals, etc. And then you have someone who takes this opposite stance of Jerry Falwell to be like, we're here to save the country. We're going to save America.
Mm,
I'm like, from freedom?
Familiar.
From freedom?
After the Moral Majority helped elect Ronald Reagan in 1980, the federal government began promoting policies that more aligned with Christian conservatism. The judiciary also became more sympathetic to religious expression in public life. As a result, Madeline faced a growing legal precedent that permitted religious elements in government spaces as long as they were framed within a cultural or historical context. She turned her attention away from court battles and toward her radio show and running her organization.
And it's like it kind of waned almost in a way. Like the dialogue that was available in the 1970s, really the door shut on that with Jerry Falwell and the religious right. It was like, I'm not even going to engage in that, versus Bob Harrington, weird guy, however, whatever you think of him, would like sit with her and have like, while there was a little bit of sparring and stuff, there was no screaming, there was not real name calling. It was like idea versus idea. And it was like true debate. And for whatever reason, this type of even further conservative and kind of head in the sand, we are not budging, there's no room for discussion, is ironic given the idea of like, well, we're just trying to like reinstate America for everyone. It's like, but you're not though, right? Like you're now icing out this woman who wanted there to be openness, like the ability for anybody to do anything they want and so far as what they want to practice, and you're now taking that away. I think that's the beginning of a road of where we kind of end up here, where we are now.
Yeah, it's ironic. And I think in any case like this, where someone's fighting for their right or their children's right to not have to participate in something. Mm-hmm. And the other side is fighting because we want everyone to participate in it. Well, which one makes more sense? Why should everybody have to participate in something if they don't want to?
Yeah. And that's, like I said, especially if the warning is, and this woman's trying not to participate because she's a Marxist, like Ted Cruz and that unwoke kind of movement love to use this idea of cultural Marxism or communism, which this is this homogenization. And they all want you to believe the same thing that the state believes. And that's what they want you to believe. Meanwhile, we have a literal religious advisor in our current White House. Mm-hmm. So explain to me, I don't understand. Truly, I don't understand how, like, saying that this is the way of freedom by just being exactly like we tell you to do and do exactly what we tell you to do. And that's freedom. So, yeah, I don't know.
That's the American way, my friend.
Yeah, right. Madeline was right. Sinister Hood will be right back.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinister Hood, Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/liveshows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater, Season of the Witch. Begins. During the 1980s and early 90s, Madeline and her organization, American Atheists, faced significant internal and familial challenges. In 1980, William Murray, Madeline's eldest son and the plaintiff in the landmark Supreme Court case, Murray versus Curlett, experienced a profound religious transformation, converting to Christianity. He chronicled his spiritual journey and the complexities of his relationship with his mother in his 1982 memoir, My Life Without God. Following his conversion, William founded the Religious Freedom Coalition, a Washington, D.C.-based organization dedicated to advocating for persecuted Christians worldwide and promoting Christian values and public policy.
He about couldn't have gone any more opposite.
That's got to sting.
Yeah. She's like, the damn religious got him.
Well, I mean, again, who knows if he had a profound religious transformation. I mean, perhaps he did.
Think so, because of AA.
Also, yeah, but also his childhood and the way he was, you know, I mean, nobody has a good relationship with each other in any of these families. So to go against someone who perhaps you felt like your entire life was kind of making an example out of you, or like you said, using as a pawn to further your own cause. Maybe he's like, well, you know what the biggest thing I could do is just go full on Christian and also start an organization for persecuted Christians.
I mean, truly, it's like that's another way that his mom would have done the same thing. Like, take that attention that you had from being the kid of that lady and parlay it into whatever your cause is and go there. But I think if you had kind of the lack of structure that Bill's childhood had, he was often like behind in school because they moved around a lot. He did not have a great relationship with Madeline, better relationship with Pup, which was Madeline's dad, who was religious. It's not like super shocking that, you know, when he finally was able to overcome his substance use issues, but he did not reconnect with Robin. I think she stayed totally with Madeline and Garth, and he really was not in contact with them.
She really didn't have contact with either of her biological parents.
No, not at all.
While Bill continued on his own spiritual journey, under Madeline's leadership, American Atheists grew to claim over 70,000 member families. The organization funded its operations through donations, merchandise sales, and inheritances left by deceased atheists. Madeline and her son Garth used radio and television programs to promote their secular views.
despite their outspoken advocacy for atheism. Reports indicate that the O'Hare family lived a relatively affluent lifestyle, raising concerns about the organization's financial management. Madeline was known to leave town unexpectedly, sometimes disappearing for extended periods without explanation. Throughout this time, she also received numerous death threats, highlighting the intense opposition her activism provoked.
And it's wild, too. So she's divorced from Richard by now, you know, a couple years, and is getting all these threats, but doesn't take any of the money that definitely, I think, she was using American atheist money as income for herself in a way that perhaps she wasn't. I don't know that she was like paying herself a salary like the way she should have. I think it was like buying expenses that mm-hmm. like spending the expenses on herself as like payment to herself, and then saying, well, we don't take a salary. You know, we live, mm-hmm. you know, below our means. So you kind of ironically become these preachers that you're railing against, some of whom you're railing against. But it was just her, Garth, and Robin living in a house together. And, you know, she doesn't have a bodyguard, you know, doesn't have, despite people sending letters like, I'm going to slit your throat or whatever.
It is interesting that she'd been doing this by this point for a long time and was hated by so many, mm-hmm. and more safety measures weren't in place.
No, not at all. But it's, and the thing is like Robin, I think, really liked what she was doing and wanted. I mean, it's not, you don't know anything else. It's much like little Bill whenever he agreed to that lawsuit, right? Like, well, this is what grandma wants me to do. Mm-hmm. Because Robin graduated from UT when she was just 19. I mean, she was very smart. She became the editor-in-chief of the American Atheist newsletter, like at that same time. So you have like a very young, brilliant person that's running it. And she was really stoked about it. But Garth, like, didn't really want to do it. Madeline was kind of losing control. Like some of the like satellite offices were like maybe wanting to separate. The board of directors would talk like, are we going to get rid of her? Again, perhaps there was some financial issues, but also just like the ship had sailed insofar as people wanting to hear her type of discourse, because mm-hmm. I don't think there was a good faith opponent for her to, you know, trade barbs with. Like there would have been like Johnny Carson sort of took her as a, you know, he would like kind of laugh and joke with her. Mm-hmm. And then once the Jerry Falwells of the world and the, you know, in the Reagan years, it was like, we're not even going to talk about that. So Garth was just miserable. He didn't want to do mm-hmm. it. He was not very like gregarious. He struggled with a speech impediment his whole life and was not like a great public speaker. He was constantly like had ulcers, inflamed gums, stomach problems, back, neck problems, and was just constantly miserable. And one of the members said that he stayed at her house and she's like, we stayed up to like 4 a.m. talking. And she's like, he never wanted to run the organization. Mm. He simply wanted to be a writer.
Mm.
And like, fuck, your whole life was stolen. Mm-hmm. Was it stolen? Right. Or like that, it was your whole life was like predetermined for you in a way.
Yeah. Didn't really have a choice.
Like, goddamn.
It's ironic because she's fighting for people to have a choice to live the life they want. And she's kind of forcing her kid to live the one she's living.
Yeah. And it was sort of this manipulation, right? Of like, if you leave me, that's like, that's it. You're like your brother. You're turning mm-hmm. on me. So he just stayed like miserably.
Poor
stayed.
Garth.
Dude.
At the age of 67, Madeline Murray O'Hare resigned as president of American Atheists in 1986, appointing her son, Garth, as her successor. This transition was part of a planned succession to ensure the organization's continuity. Despite stepping down, Madeline continued to exert significant influence over the organization's direction and activities, maintaining an active role in its operations. So she steps down, but her son's doing it. So she's just kind of, she's still doing it, but it's now she has a mouthpiece.
And now she's like, and you can just sign that. You don't have to tell me, but also you have to tell me. And also I want to check and see what you're doing. So I think it was kind of like this idea that like, it's time now to make him the official person in charge, because she suffered from diabetes. She had a hip replacement surgery. She just was getting older, I think mm-hmm. slowing down a little bit. So it's better to go ahead and have the torch passed. But she's also like, but I'm going to also keep my hand on the bottom part of the torch while we're going. Like, didn't totally let go.
Which I imagine made Garth's life even harder.
Mm-hmm.
In 1993, American Atheist hired David Roland Waters as an office manager, unaware of his criminal past. Waters had a history of violent offenses, including a 1964 murder conviction that led to a 12-year prison sentence. Not long after joining American Atheists, he embezzled $54,000, which resulted in his conviction for theft in 1995. Madeline publicly exposed him in a scathing article in the organization's newsletter, detailing not only the embezzlement, but also his previous offenses. This betrayal would have severe consequences.
Yeah, and I think he, we'll talk more about David Waters in the next one, but it's certainly an interesting thing that if someone takes money from you, that you write a whole ass letter to, or a newsletter to your followers, but
especially when you know he has a prior murder charge. That's brave and bold, or perhaps not very smart.
Yeah, or yeah, you're just like, I'm untouchable, truly. But I think it was because despite there was like murmurs around the office and the operate, like the people in operations going, I think Madeline's using this money for herself. There was no outward bad publicity for American Atheists. Like, she took pride in being like, we are like a clean organization. We're not like those religious organizations that take your money and steal it. So because it was a public conviction, I think she felt like I have to kind of cover, not cover it up, but like explain it mm-hmm. to the people whose money was taken. And she just went fucking scorched earth because that's what she did.
She went hog wild. On August 28th, 1995, Madeline, her son Garth, and her granddaughter Robin vanished without warning. There was a cryptic note on the American Atheist office door, signed by Garth, that read,
"The Murray O'Hare family has been called out of town on an emergency basis. We do not know how long we will be gone at the time of the writing of this memo."
At their shared home, however, things seemed amiss. Breakfast was left on the table. Madeline's diabetes medication was left on the kitchen counter. Most suspicious of all, their three small dogs, beloved members of the family that Madeline treated better than most humans, were found unattended. This scene suggested the family had left in a hurry, and perhaps not of their own free will. So what do we think?
Well, this is she's a polarizing figure, and I am sad that we all don't know more about her and that she's not more spotlighted given the internet's embracing of the atheist movement and how I think a lot of primarily men get credited with being like these free thinkers and they're so brilliant and came up with these things. But she, for decades before that, was not only talking the talk, but she was literally walking the walk just right up to the courthouse and fucking filing lawsuits mm-hmm. over and over. So I think that without the internet, she was forced to do newsworthy things so that she could then talk about the newsworthy things she's done. And I'm hopeful that we're moving back toward a life like that, because I feel like the last, at least the last 20 years, but definitely the last years with the internet, it's a lot more about like, what can we do? What can I do to promote myself versus actually doing something at the court to maybe make a difference or like promote this issue that's going to maybe make a difference? So I think we're moving with TikTok. I feel like we're moving back into like a more democratized type where people are like, I'm going to fucking do this on my own. Watch mm-hmm. me. I'll go do it right now. And I'm glad that we're moving more towards that. It's like I said, it's this pendulum that's swinging back and forth. So I'm happy to see we're swinging back to more people doing shit that I think would have made her proud.
Yeah. And with TikTok or the internet or, you know, any type of public gathering spaces online, that's how you galvanize and, mm-hmm. you know, and get people together. Cause you're like, oh, you wanted to do that crazy yeah. shit. So did I. Let's go do it together. And then you get a group and that's how things get changed. But it's a reminder that it all starts with one.
Yeah.
You know, you can light a bunch of candles by just lighting that first one.
It's true. And like that, I think you're right. Like finding spaces that are the basements of our time. Like mm-hmm. she was just inviting people over to her house,
the being basements like, basements of our time.
That's like a cool 1970s song we would have sang around the campfire. But I love digging into stuff like this where I've like heard the name, but I didn't put two and two together. I didn't quite know why, you know, we have a moment of silence as opposed to an out loud prayer in school. And it turns out it's because this lady came back from her failed trip to Russia and was like, not in my America.
Today, bitches. I mean, yeah, I didn't know this much about her. And, you know, I am an atheist. So it's, I think, one of those things where she was a loudmouthed woman and people don't like loudmouthed women. And
yeah.
they often get forgotten in history.
No, she, yeah, I would agree with that. And probably one of my favorite Madeline Murray O'Hare moments is her Johnny Carson appearance when she goes on a defense of the four-letter word and several of them and why she loves them. And she says, I'm not going to let some church tell me what I can and can't do. Tell me what to eat. Tell me I got to eat fish on a certain day. Tell me how many kids I'm supposed to have because I can't have birth control. Tell me what I'm supposed to wear. I can't be nude. I was like, I love you, Madeline. I love you so much.
Where's the lie there? I don't see any problems with anything she just said.
Not at all. When she said, I use four-letter words exquisitely, delightfully, deliberately, and abundantly whenever they need to be used. And I very rarely scatter these pearls before swine.
Ooh,
I love this bitch.
Pearls before swine in the basement of our lives.
Fucking write songs, baby. We don't need nobody needs ChatGPT. The songs are within you.
No, yeah,
they're all within you.
Within you.
But yeah, I'm so glad to everybody that sent this case in for us to look into, and I am encouraged to talk about next week just because you know. The end of the story. It's as the title implies, it's not a happy ending.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, not a happy ending.
It is in the title, but yeah.
We definitely will get into what happened in the next one.
All of it.
Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content, such as Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. I've also got 3 gavels, so
hell yeah.
Don't mean to brag.
You got to get a third arm.
True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Emma the Asshole, and Popular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
We also offer free trials, so if you want to know what is going on Patreon, but you haven't joined yet, you can join for free for a week at any of the levels. Check out all the perks and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. And this week's the perfect week to do it, because if you're listening to this before Thursday, March 20th at 8 p.m. Central, you could sign up for a free trial at the Getting Into It tier, which is the highest tier, or even Ruling the Airwaves tier. And those tiers both participate in our monthly Q&A on Crowdcast, which is on the third Thursday of the month, March 20th this month. So you could just join for free for a week and cancel before the week's over, or stick around and get a ton of other stuff. What else do they get when they sign up?
Ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, like you just said, on the third Thursday of the month, quarterly live bonus content. You get weekly audio bonus content. And if you just sign up as a free member, it's not a free trial. You just sign up as a member. You get a audio bonus content sent to you once a month, just as a thank you, as well as a ton of free content backlog. You also get minisodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to get merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. You guys have been killing it with these 5 stars. Thank you so much. We sincerely appreciate it.
And also, just thank you guys for writing the as great of reviews as you've written. And I like it because even the newer reviews that are 5 stars, we'll go back and reference some of the 1-star reviews. They're like, someone said this in their review, and I just want to rebut that. And so just shout out, because it's thorough. It's not even like you took the time to go, you know what? I do like that show. I'm going to go write what I think. Some listeners scrolled to the 1 stars and went, fuck you, made their own rebuttal. And I just thank you. I thank you for taking the time. When I read someone go, I can't believe someone said da-da-da-da, and I was like, hey, thanks for reading. I couldn't believe that either.
Thanks for doing your research.
Above and beyond.
Well, we sincerely appreciate it. So thank you so much. You also can submit your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday and send in whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. Don't worry, it is free. It's another thing you get to be a part of by signing up just to be a free member. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2025.
All aboard, mateys. The Kraken awaits at crimewave.com/sinister. Get that fan code, and we'll see you November 3rd through 7th on the high seas. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us on TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast. Watch clips from episodes, live streams, and more. Be sure you're following the show on YouTube, where you can watch full Wednesday episodes. They're also ad-free on Patreon. And you can also see some of our fun live streams, like on YouTube this week. We went live to discuss the iHeartRadio Awards because we thought maybe Reputation Taylor's version would be dropping. Spoiler alert, it did not. But we still had a great time just like learning, mostly learning who all the celebrities were because we don't know.
Did feel a bit old though when I was like,
computer, who's literally on the screen?
They just showed 20 artists and I know one of them.
Yeah. And everyone's screaming because I'm like, I know they're famous. I just know I'm not.
I don't know who they are.
Aware of that. So. Also, if you are looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or you want to treat yourself, get yourself a pep talk, some advice, just have a video from us. Book a cameo now. From happy birthdays to birth announcements, congratulations, celebrations on graduation, Father's Day, Mother's Day, any kind of day, we will create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. Not only is it a thoughtful, unique gift, because even if someone else got him a cameo from us, it'll be different because we say different things every time.
We do.
But it's also great because it is sent digitally and instantly, and it will hopefully make them scream like I did when I got my cameo from Coach Bennett. Well, where can people find you on the internet?
I am on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet, Heather versus the world.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shout-outs. Erica Blanchard.
Ariana Allen.
Tay.
Maddie.
Sleepyhead Sloth.
Hillary.
Shoshana.
Abigail Koppok.
Abby Peterson.
Cassie.
Grayson Murray.
Jimmy.
And Allie.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We sincerely appreciate all your love and support. We hope we pronounced your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Your favorite ghouls are brewing up a night you won't forget.
That's right. It's Sinisterhood Season of the Witch, a one-night-only live show at the Haunted Texas Theater in Dallas, Texas.
Join us Saturday, October 4th, 2025, when the veil will be thin, but we remain thick.
And if you can't claw your way to Dallas, don't worry, little goblins. We'll be streaming the whole thing so you can cackle along from your crypt at home.
Tickets are on sale now at sinisterhood.com/live shows.
So grab your broomsticks, polish your crystal balls, and mark your calendars for October 4th at the Texas Theater. Season of the Witch begins.